My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Cobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Can you do your Steve Blues Clues and just ask, hey, Mythfits, how you doing?
Hey, Mythfits, it's you. Oh, it's awesome. It's great to see you. How are you? How you doing?
Dude, perfect. I just got chills. Nailed it.
Welcome, Mythfits.
Oh, Carrie, hi, how are you?
You want to start like that?
Yeah, what's up, Carrie? Welcome welcome back, Mythfits.
Hey there, Mythfits. It's Carrie Byron and Tori Belaichi. We were Mythbusters. Now we're best friends. There's your show.
speaking of Mythbusters and speaking of myths, do you remember when we were working on the show, somebody came in and they were like, did you hear Chuck Norris died?
Oh,
and we were
yeah.
like, I don't know.
And we were all obsessed with Chuck Norris because it was like the punchline of every joke.
Yeah, it was like, he doesn't do push-ups. He pushes the earth down.
Yeah.
And so we went online and we were searching, and we could not find where Chuck Norris was dead. But everybody was saying, oh, yeah, Chuck Norris is dead. And it turned out it was an urban legend. He hadn't died. He's still alive, actually.
Yeah, actually, so... there's another urban legend just like that that kind of leads into our guest today. Let's roll this clip.
Hi. You got a second? Okay. You remember how when we were younger, we used to run around and hang out with Blue and find clues and talk to Mr. Salt, freak out about the mail and do all the fun stuff. And then one day I was like, oh, hey, guess what? Big news. I'm leaving. This is my brother Joe. He's your new best friend. And then I got on a bus and I left. And we didn't see each other for like a really long time. Can we just talk about that? Great.
Dude, that's.
Yeah.
It's
okay,
Steve from
so,
Blue's Clues.
Steve from Blue's Clues. At some point, when we first started launching this podcast, you know, I was looking at the people because, you know, I was seeing new followers and I saw Steve Burns and I was like, wait, is that Steve from Blue's Clues? He follows us. Is Steve from Blue's Clues a Mythbuster fan? And I just started DMing him. I was like, hey.
You started stalking him?
Like, it's an urban legend how he left that show. And I just, I figured she could come and talk to us.
You know, Carrie, there are a lot of myths about Steve Burns, including one that he's dead.
Well, I guess we can bust that one right away. Let's go ask him if he's dead. Steve! Steve Burns from Blue's Clues. Are you alive?
No. Yes. I am still alive. And I'm so psyched to be here.
Oh, we are so excited you're here. It is so nice to meet you. Like, seriously, you're like the next generation Pee Wee Herman. Like, oh, you're
Mr. Rogers.
You're such an iconic character for so many generations.
Oh, well, I don't know about all that. If that is true, it doesn't feel that way. but especially with the Fred Rogers thing, I absolutely accept that for the praise that it is. It's difficult to conceive of higher praise than that in many ways, but holy crap, it ain't true. I am nothing like Mr. Rogers. I mean, that guy was like a bodhisattva who should probably be on our money. And I was just a neurotic bald guy who fell backwards into a weird job. So,
honestly, we just listened to this one clip that you put out recently where you were talking to the camera like you used to talk to Blue's Clues, where on Blue's Clues, where you were like, how are you guys doing? And I was checking the internet. Millennials lost their minds. Like, your calming voice was such a part of their childhood. Like, you were coming into their living rooms. You were dealing with their feelings on such a base level that coming into their lives now, your sort of resurfacing into their lives, had millennials crying.
Yeah, weird, right? I think there is a thing where there's special access granted when you're like crisscross applesauce, like on your grandma's carpet, you know, having a juice box, watching TV, whatever that thing is able to speak to you as an adult from a place of joy from your childhood in a way. Mm-hmm. And I think if Grover would send a message and I felt, and I took it personally, I'd weep for sure, you know, because I have those things from my childhood too. But the idea that I might be that thing for someone else's childhood is really, frankly, not something I've ever been able to get my arms around in a meaningful way. But
that's wild.
But it's cool. Think about it. Most kids' TV talks to the camera. You know, I mean, that's a trope of children's television, right? I think what we did that was different is that we listened to it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was always kind of a magic trick to do that. And no one, and you know, and I was, that was always like something I did on my own in secret in a way, because I was mostly working with child development specialists. Like, there really weren't like ACTI people around. I was kind of the only person who spoke that language at all. And I was, I don't know, 21, 22 years old. So I didn't know what I was doing, you know, and, but I took that part incredibly seriously. Like, that to me, when I remember Blue's Clues, that was the whole job, was you and I.
Yeah.
You know, like that was it. Cause nothing else was there. You guys understand this better than almost anybody else. You're VFX people or SFX people. And like, you understand what it is to be on a blue screen. And there was nothing there. I was in like I was in a void. Right. And the only thing I had was the camera.
Yeah.
And so Blue's Clues felt like incredibly small and incredibly personal to me. It was this thing I did with the camera who was you. You know, so I think that translated.
Your voice is freaking hypnotic. I have noticed since we've gotten on this podcast, Tori and I are big, fast, loud talkers. Even introducing you, just knowing you were here, I feel like I went a little zen. Like, I feel calmer talking to you. I am great. Talking slower. I definitely noticed a shift in Mythbusters. I definitely noticed a shift in Mythbusters. When we first started the show, we talked off screen to a producer who was over to the side of camera.
Oh, yeah.
The minute that we looked into the camera and we started presenting to the audience, the show's popularity escalated. A connection happened between us and the audience, right, where they felt like we were talking to them. We were in their living room every week. Like, our celebrity all of a sudden just started to rise because we stopped being, you know, just background, but actually being interactive. And I think maybe that's the power that you have had with making that connection with kids when they were really young.
Well, listen, you know, speaking to a camera with joy and authentic curiosity about a curriculum is hard as shit, you know? Mm-hmm. And you guys were great at it. That was the first thing I noticed about Mythbusters. So I was like, these guys are, this is hard. And these guys are really good at this. Like, you were all extraordinarily good hosts of what was essentially, eventually, like, a science curriculum on a certain level. And you guys were all great at it. And that was one of the things I loved about the show. Spoiler, I loved that show. Oh, my God.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. Stephen Blue's Clues like Mythbusters. Okay.
Oh, awesome. I was obsessed with Mythbusters.
But, you know, it's funny because, like, how when you were doing your show, how did they direct you? Because with us, when we first started, we were so nervous because none of us wanted to be, at least I didn't want to be on camera, that it was like really nerve wracking. And so they would be like, just relax, come out of your, you know, you have this wall up, you look scared. And then as we got more comfortable, then they would ratchet it up and be like, all right, I'd do that again, but pretend like you're on crack, like just over the top, like just, and so your show and the way you performed, it was so subtle and so kind of gentle. How, like, what was the direction?
The first season of the show, we didn't have directors so much. There was a sense on Blue's Clues that this was an animated show with this guy sometimes.
Yeah.
Right?
You're that
and
guy.
And so they would have animation directors come in and say things like, hey, man, can you do that again and move your Y axis 15 degrees this way? I'd be like, you cannot be serious right now. The thing you just said can't be real. And they were like, yeah, that's what we need you to do. I'm like, I'm carbon based, man. Like, that's not, I'm not, I cannot do that, you know? And it was all technical. It was all technical. So I would run around and talk to the soap and talk to the condiments. And I would have to get here. And if I was here, it was wrong.
Yeah.
Right. And we'd have to do it again. And this was, there was no point of orientation. I was on a void. I was in a void. Right. So we were mostly just concerned with that. And, the only real kind of direction I would get was happier. You know, they would always say happier. And I would be, and I would always make the point like, no, no. We must be more Bert than Ernie. You know, like there.
That's great.
This guy must have a human ballast. He doesn't know which of these snacks is a graham cracker. We must make that part of his character. He's not the brightest bulb in the world, you know, and they would just be like, what? No, happier. And so I would kind of sneak in all of these. All this human stuff while everyone was checking their email.
Wow. So you were self-directing.
Yeah. But eventually we all sort of got on the same page. At first, you know, we were all kids, you know, I think our executive producer was 25. You know, we were just kids and they were overwhelmed with the technical aspect of everything. We were all drowning in why are we trying to make this animated kid show on desktop Macintosh for absolutely no money. So Steve kind of evolved in private, in a void. And I mean that about myself too. I mean both Steves, I guess, on some level.
This message is sponsored by Raycon. All right, first of all, Tori, what's with the shades?
I thought it'd make me look cooler. What do you think? Is it working?
Seriously?
I had an accident.
What did you do? What happened to you?
It wasn't me. My daughter, she accidentally headbutted me, and it was like, I knew it hurt. I knew it was bad. I didn't realize it was going to be this bad. So anyway, so now I have a black eye.
You know, we got to talk about Raycon now, right?
Now that's something that's cool.
It'll look good with your sunglasses. You know, as the holidays are coming up, Raycon makes the perfect gift, because who doesn't want earbuds for Christmas?
I know I do. And I got mine, and they are so sleek. Look at how cool that looks, Gary.
I've already tested it. They've got a battery life of like 32 hours. They charge really, really fast. They've got like multi-point connectivity. They're like ergonomically fit. They stay wherever you put them. I was doing some jogging earlier. I'm lying. I wasn't jogging. I was walking earlier.
I was
going to
say, you don't jog.
I was walking earlier with my dog. It just sounded cooler when I said jogging because it made it seem like I was super fit, but I'm not. When I'm vigorously walking, they stay in place.
These are great because they're super tiny. They're super comfortable, compact. You can barely notice them. I love them.
I mean, I got the black. Obviously, you got the black too. But you know, it comes in blue, rose gold, mint, yellow. So I could just like match my outfits. You know, Tori, over 3 million customers already love Raycons. They come
Make
with a
that
30-
3 million and two.
They come with a 30-day happiness guarantee. God, I wish everything did. Can you imagine if people did too? Never mind. So if you don't love them, returns are easy and you have nothing to lose.
We love them, and I think you guys will love them too, so you should definitely get a pair. Raycon's going big for Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Everything's up to 30% off.
Just click on the link in the description or go to buyraycon.com/mythfits to save on Raycon audio products site-wide.
That's buyraycon.com/mythfits.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future. Because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts. So I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
If Steve Burns was a Mythbusters fan, do you have a favorite episode that, like, spoke to you? This is for my own personal. I'm like, Steve from Blue Schools watched us. Is there?
You know, I just talked to Adam on my podcast. And I tried not to talk about Mythbusters at all. I was like, I want to talk to you about the future of truth and the importance of critical thinking and the difference between falsifiability and plausibility, but I didn't. I just talked about Mythbusters the whole time. And I know this wasn't a segment you guys did, but I thought Lead Balloon was one of the most beautiful moments of television. Not only was it just a beautiful endeavor, you know, but the object that they made should have been in the Whitney. Like that thing was gorgeous. And it was just sort of a distillation of the show. Like, here's an adage that we assume truth about.
Right.
But with joy and curiosity and scrutiny, we're going to see if it's real, you know.
Just pure process. The process of trying to figure that out and the whole journey of creating this with just the scientific method and just everything that they could pull to make it happen was a really good example.
And the crazy thing is it worked. Yeah. Like that was, you're just looking at this thing going, wait a minute, this is defying all logic. This should not be floating right now.
I think I stood up from my couch and applauded when it happened. I was like, gentlemen, beautiful. I was very team Carrie in one respect. I was very anti dead pig episodes. Mm-hmm. I was like, bro. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a vegetarian or anything, but this is a lot.
Pretty gnarly.
Like, I don't need, like, come on. I'm happy with the ballistics gel. I don't need my analog to be this specific here.
Science. We need the science.
Oh, man.
We were pretty anti because you have to get rid of that pig at the end, right? So there were several ways that we had to dispose of the pig. One way is if it wasn't too riddled with, like, you know, lead because we shot it. Jamie, if he was able, would butcher it and consume the meat and hand the meat to everybody. And
we'd we'd make pulled pork. We'd take it home and make pulled pork and then bring it back.
Someone gave me my husband ate meat at the time, so they gave me a big package to bring home. But to prank me, they put like an eye and an ear on the top of it. So when I opened it up, I was just ruined.
That's horrifying.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Behind the scenes madness. We also had to sometimes take it to the rendering plant, which was near the shop. And Tori and I remember one time where we drove this pig carcass to the rendering plant. And the smell it permeates every pore, and it's like an oil in the air. So it gets in your nose and it gets in your hair. Like my clothes, I wanted to burn because we walked away, and for the rest of the day, I'm like, I still smell it. I still smell that.
So Steve, I feel like one of the biggest myths about you is why you left the show. Can you expound on what is the real reason?
Actually, let's go through these myths and you can tell us if they are busted or confirmed. Okay, first myth. Are you dead?
Plausible.
From the beyond.
Did you overdose?
Busted. Well, I guess it's not busted. It's not even plausible. Busted.
Did you die in a car wreck?
Busted.
Did you leave to pursue education?
Plausible.
Did you leave because you weren't getting any residuals from reruns?
Plausible.
That might be a plausible to confirm.
Did you leave because you were losing your hair?
Confirmed. That was a huge part of it. I mean, you only have to look at the pants that they decided I should wear to know how bad the wig would have been. You know, Blue's Clues was great. I cherish. It's the best thing that ever happened. Obviously, there was not a lot of public dignity involved, and you got to keep in mind, you know, like it was going real fast, and then there was this thing,
yeah.
And there was just a day when I was just kind of standing there in my dressing room with the shirt on, and the makeup artist was like fist spray painting the back of my head.
Filling in the
And I was like, we're done. We're done. This is a good time.
So you didn't leave because the green polo shirt was uncomfortable.
It was very uncomfortable. It was, again, I'm talking to people who understand TV stuff. So it wasn't just like an off the rack cotton shirt because of the amount of light we had to use, because we were doing chroma key as cheap as possible. The way to do that is to overlight everything. Yeah. And every color looked terrible. So we had to have these hyper dyed. Each one of those shirts was handmade and they were wool, and it was like a hair shirt. Those shirts were extremely uncomfortable. They were just like, oh, God, come on. So, but that's not why I left, you know. The real is that the entire time I was on Blue's Clues, I was also dealing with undiagnosed severe clinical depression, which really made my job wicked hard. And I didn't have any idea what was going on with me because I was a kid, you know.
How old were you at this time?
I was like, by the time I left the show, I guess I was 28, 29 years old, something like that.
Okay.
And I didn't know what was up. I just knew that it was hard to be happy, which is what they kept telling me to be, you know. And I got there most days. Yeah. And I was able to find that sense of wonder. Being so young, I didn't really have any replenishment strategy for the well I kept going to, you know. By the time I left that show, I was noticing it in my performance, and I was just struggling to do my job.
That hits me. I'm feeling like tears for you right now, because to be honest, during Mythbusters, I was having the same problem. I had some really bad depression. And I remember, especially after I had my baby, had really bad postpartum for a while. And the dissidence of showing up on screen and being like, oh my gosh, everything's great. I'm so excited to be here. But on the inside, just feeling black, you know, like I remember the camera would go off and sometimes I would just stop my car and sit in a field and cry because I couldn't figure out like how to deal with what seemed like the best days of my life. Like if I'm not happy when I'm on a hit TV show, like there's something wrong. And it was almost like Mythbusters showed me that I had depression, because if things were going so well and I still felt this random sadness, there was nothing to blame it on. And that distance is what actually got me to go figure out how to get some help for that.
Amen, sister. I mean, I relate to everything you just said word for word, and that there is a dissonance that creates enough relief between creates enough contrast that it at least it was also in my life very instructive. I thought, wow, something must be going on.
Yeah.
Because my job is hard, but I've got a good thing going here, you know, and a lot of responsibility. And my reaction to that, I don't know what you did, but my reaction to that was just to fight. You know, I thought, you know, I'm just going to fight through this. But I always say you don't fight depression, you collect it.
Yeah.
Right. And it just got so incredibly heavy, but very few people understand what you just outlined, which is, you know, I think a lot of people understand depression. And I think most people do, honestly. And I think a lot of people understand the ask to be not depressed professionally while mm-hmm. you're still feeling that way or at home with your family or with your friends. But I think very few people understand the job of being the happiest people in North America mm-hmm. on days when you don't even have your own approval.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's everybody's, a lot of people's jobs are hard. That was the way in which our job was particularly tough, you know, and I wasn't dealing with it in any meaningful way. And it just became a little heavier than I could lift. You know, I couldn't do both at the same time by the end of that show.
And was that the reason that you decided to leave, was the mental health?
Ultimately, yeah. I was like, you know what? This is diminishing returns at this point. And, you know, I didn't have the language then to know what was going on. And I didn't leave and say, I'm doing this for my mental health. I just knew that what I was doing was unsustainable. And there was something else going on the whole time. I was an urban legend. I was a myth during that time, as you guys mentioned.
Right.
Everyone thought I died. And there was a persistent sort of indelible internet rumor that I was dead. And we couldn't bust that myth.
That's crazy.
You know, like I would go on TV. I was making new television all the time. And yet everyone thought I was dead. After enough years of that, it feels like a preference in a way. You know, it's like, wow, this sucks. And it's not great when you're, you know, severely depressed and the world tells you that you're dead.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? And that's one of the reasons I loved your show, was because you guys felt like a rescue team to me. I was like, what if Tory Grant and Carrie showed up with like an EKG? Like, we could bust this myth right here and now, guys.
We could bring you back from the dead.
We could do it. Like, oh no, his vitals are fine.
Carrie, look what I'm sporting.
What are you sporting?
My sweater from Rag and Boat. Yeah.
You're looking stylish.
I got a pair of jeans too, and this outfit has become my favorite outfit. I'm like wearing it too much.
Stand up, do a little twirl. Let's see.
Well, I don't have them on right now. I have sweatpants.
I knew
on.
You were wearing pants. I knew it, but you could put them on later when you go on a date with your wife.
I always do the podcast with no pants.
Me too.
But look at this one. Look at this. This is my Rag and Bone sweater, and it is so nice. Comfy. And especially now that it's starting to cool down, well, except for today, right now it's like 75 degrees here in California, but it will start cooling down soon.
I think you look great. You know, I also got some Rag and Bone for the guy I'm dating.
Oh, yeah?
And, it upped his wardrobe game, I have to say.
He's
a little adventure-y. He tends to wear unironic fleece. And so I was really excited to pull this box over and be like, yes. I got him this like really manly, sturdy fabric button up with some dark jeans. And it's just the whole outfit looks good.
Rag & Bone clothing is built with premium materials and craftsmanship. These jeans are made to last, not just for a season, but for years.
They're true investment pieces that only get better with wear. Rag & Bone's Infuse collection uses a meticulous 8-step process to create rich, multidimensional washes.
From indigo and black washes, my favorite, for work or evening wear, to lighter vintage-inspired blues for casual weekends, they're your go-to denim for every occasion.
They feel premium, they look sharp, and you can tell that they're meant to be a long-term wardrobe staple. It's time to upgrade your denim with Rag & Bone. For a limited time, our listeners get 20% off their entire order with the code MYTHFITS at rag-bone.com.
That's 20% off at rag-bone.com with promo code MythFits. When they ask where you heard about them, please support our show and let them know we sent you.
Let them know you're a MythFit too.
Yeah, you're going to look good. What's the craziest child interaction, like fan interaction you've ever had?
Oh, it's going to tug your heartstrings.
Oh, I love it. Bring it.
I'll see if I can get through. One thing I'm not enjoying about being present on the internet and podcasting is I cry a lot, which is insane because that's not me, but it feels like on every other podcast I weep. So I'm going to try to get through this one without crying. I was doing a fan convention in Pittsburgh and this dude came up. He's in his 30s or whatever. He's like, hey, man. I was like, hey. And I'm signing a picture. He's like, do you remember me? I'm like, I don't. I'm sorry. And he showed me a picture. And I'm like, wait a minute. He was a Make-A-Wish kid.
Oh, God.
And I did remember him.
Now you're going to make me cry.
And I just gave him a hug. And he said, hey, man, we made it.
Oh, my God.
And that's my favorite interaction I've ever had, maybe with anyone.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That is.
If I could hug you right now,
he was sick.
Oh, my God.
Wow, dude, that's amazing.
That's the best one. I got Tori. Look at that. He's fully.
He's not easy to make cry.
They used to have, part of the Make-A-Wish, they would bring a group of kids who were terminally ill through the shop. And man, it was just like, this might be the last time we see these kids. Like, I don't know if they're going to make it. And just to hear that story is awesome.
You know who was really, really good in these situations? Grant. Oh. Grant, when any kid would walk into the shop, instantly tapped into their curiosity and their fascination. And he would guide them through just a moment of excitement through everything that he was excited about, showing them robots and tools and whatever. And like anytime a kid came to the shop, he just lit up. And then after Mythbusters, he made a little robotic baby Yoda and would take it to the children's hospitals. Grant was so good with kids. I always wanted him to end up having a kid someday.
I can see that. I can see that being real. He had such a sweet soul that that came through for sure.
Did you get a picture with that kid that made it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's so odd. That is such, like, what a great re-meeting. I love that.
Insane, right? And I have another question.
Yeah.
What's it like? You guys graduated from some weird university by the end of that series. You guys, I was so jealous. I was like, they're like weapons experts. They're stunt drivers now. They can like fabricate literally anything. You guys left that show with actual superpowers. Do you use all that stuff now in your lives?
Occasionally, but only for... People employ us to be like ex-Mythbusters. So recently I worked with a flamethrower that was not stock, that had to be rigged up to, I think it started at 200 PSI so that I could shoot flames through a wall and try to destroy that wall. So like I did get to walk on set and be like, oh yeah, okay, so what kind of kickback does that have? Okay, so would that be like a 50 cal kind of pushing on you, or is this more going to be like a fire hose? Like there was these skills that I came with that the guys on set were like, wow, okay, most people aren't prepared for this kind of conversation. So we have them, but like we can't put them on a resume because we are qualified for no actual job.
Right, okay, That makes sense.
And I have a 4-year-old daughter, so all the skills I have are completely useless. Like, I cannot. It's like sometimes trying to reach her, it's like, I've done all these things and I have no skills for this.
No, you know what you have skills for, Tori? Is you know what that kid is going to be up to because you done it all.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, I've always been curious, like, what are the ones you guys loved? You know, what are the myths you had the most fun? You know what I didn't like? You know what I got sick of? Blowing stuff up. I was like, sure, that is fun. And I always like that, but that's not the most interesting thing these guys do.
Right.
You know, that is not the most interesting
thing. It was a fallback. It was like, we don't know what to do. Then we're going to do this. It's going to be a crowd pleaser. It's a way to end with a bang, as they say, for sure.
Yeah.
You're right. It was the ones that were unexpected, like a bull in a china shop, similar to the lead balloon. It was like, okay, bull in a china shop. It's somebody who's super clumsy and is breaking everything. We set that up, and those bulls were the most graceful creatures we'd ever seen. And they were so self-aware, and they knew exactly where their body was, and they were just weaving right through the shelves of china that we set up. And it was like, whoa, this is unexpected.
I remember that one. That was such a crazy result.
Right. Because
you set up all these things with like the most fragile objects in the world, and the bulls are like, pardon me? Excuse me? Pardon me?
Exactly.
So sorry. Coming through. Yeah, that was wild, that one.
The ones where we did really big builds that actually worked, where the three of us, because for me, my favorite ones were when the three of us were like, yeah! And like we were all hugging and like we had gone through this whole journey and we trauma bonded over making something work. And then it actually comes off, or, you know, it does what it's supposed to do, or it does completely what it's not supposed to do, where we're just laughing our butts off. Because for me, it was like the family aspect of us, like all kind of working on it together. Cause it was the cameraman and the sound recordist and anybody who was on the shoot. Like, it's not a union show, so everybody would kind of join in. Like, maybe somebody helped us build. Maybe, you know, like we would all just kind of celebrate together. So I don't even know if those moments even made it on screen, but it was those giggly family moments that were the best for me. Like, we talked about this recently, but we did one where a car was being dropped from a helicopter and mm-hmm. one was remote control racing across the desert. And it was, you know, to see if they would hit the X at the same time. But it was the coordination of remote controlling a car and dropping it just the right time and all the math that had to go right and being out in the elements. And when it finally went off, the three of us, you know, we got all of our helicopters. We all ran towards each other in the crash cars. And we were jumping in a circle, hugging and laughing and just like the joy of accomplishing something so weird, but like it actually working was just like, I will take that moment where we were tapping into that joy that you have as a kid when it's just like, yes, this is awesome.
And that came through too, Gary, you know, like it's one of there was a lot of joy in that show and it was this great mix of like joy and rigorous effort. You know, it just seemed like a good prescription for how to deal with anything. Here's a question that I've always had. Do you guys really believe that duct tape is some sort of sacred material, or did you kind of hate duct tape by the end of it? Because I always sensed like these people are sick of duct tape. They are very tired of ripping duct tape and holding duct tape and duct taping things.
It wrecks your hands and stuff, and the stickiness, there's residue that's really, really annoying. But I have a roll in the trunk of my car, and I swear to God, it has saved so many, like, it's definitely saved a couple hoopties that we've had where we had to, like, tape a bumper back on that fell off. I've helped strangers with this sort of thing, but the best was we had to get down a mountain and they were requiring chains and our chains broke and because they were old and crappy and rusted and wouldn't work, but they wouldn't let us drive without them. So temporarily, duct tape doesn't usually work very good in water, but just to get through, we fixed our snow chains with just a shit ton of duct tape holding part of it and made it through the section that they were making us use them just far enough that we could get those chains off. And it was because my mom had duct tape in her purse. And I was like, why the heck do you have duct tape? I mean, she has the miracle Mary Poppins mom purse that has everything from like Tupperware to a wet cloth and a baggie because it was before wet wipes. But she's like, well, because on Mythbusters, You always have duct tape, so I just figured it's something I should have.
You know, it really was impressive by the end of that series. It was like they did all of that. That happened. That is an impressive material. It's boats, it's planes. they really did do all that stuff. How long did it take, for example, to make a robot that throws a thing? Like, was that like, cause sometimes Grant would make a robot and it's like, either that existed in Adam's, in Jamie's studio mostly, or that took 4 months to make that. You know, like, was it really as simple as like this servo motor plus this thing, plus I know how to do all of this?
No, it's interesting. It would depend on the machine. Like if Grant was very protective, like he didn't like our help. But when it was getting to a point where it was like, we got to get this thing done by tomorrow to start testing, then we would all jump on and just all hands on deck to get things done.
But yes, we would cannibalize old machines that we'd made for other myths because, you know, the gears would already be together, or we figured out that a face slapping robot could also be a sword swinging robot, which could also be a baseball throwing robot. So it definitely cannibalized from each. We recycled. Nothing ever got thrown away. Jamie's and Adam's shop was the same way.
We threw the pigs away.
Robots never got thrown away. And Grant was also on his own time making a lot of robots for fun that did weird stuff. So he had a lot of the stuff just kind of sitting half built in boxes. So it went a lot faster than you think it would. Not necessarily like we were very autonomous. So Jamie and Adam had their stuff, but they had some weird stuff. We had our stuff. We had some weird stuff. So we would go back and forth when we couldn't find things. But honestly, a lot of these were just simple, but also resourced from just being complete hoarders over the years.
That sword swinging robot was one that scared me.
Oh, geez.
That was all of us.
Terrifying.
I was like, they just shouldn't do that.
No.
This is ill-advised. They should not be doing this. And sometimes you guys would fill some canister, some PVC pipe, some something with way too many PSIs. And I was like, I love this show, but is this going to end in tragedy someday?
Yes.
Like,
we're lucky nobody died, right?
Yeah. Like, something had to. That sword swinging robot was like
terrifying. Still is.
Yeah.
Still is.
Legitimately terrifying.
Yeah. And it was one of those situations where it's like, if that quick release accidentally pops and we're standing up, like we're all dead. Like there goes the build
team. Why was it neck height?
good question.
Yeah.
Like, I guess my real question is, what was the paperwork like? What sort of waiver did you guys sign?
We had the same insurers as Jackass. We were the safe bet.
That makes sense.
Well, we're all super still fascinated in you. And for all of our MythFit fans, can you tell them where we can find you in every possible way?
Well, digitally, you can find me on YouTube with... Alive with Steve Burns. That's the podcast name. And you can find that anywhere. You can find the podcast literally anywhere that you listen to those things. And we're very excited about that podcast. You know, it used to be Shapes and Colors and Letters and Numbers, and this is very much Death, Sex, and Taxes.
Where we are now.
A little more grown up. Real.
It is. But there's enough of the comfort of the joy of childhood in it. I hope that it allows people to open up to these bigger subjects. And then I've got social media stuff. I think on TikTok I'm high out there, it's me, Steve. And then on Instagram, I'm Steve Burns Alive.
I love it. We've busted that myth so hard today.
So good. It has been a pleasure meeting you and talking with you, man. It's like, I feel calmer just listening to your voice.
I'm the opposite. I'm like stoked that I got to hang out with the Mythbusters. Like, this is so fun for me. You have no idea. That show was very important to me for like 10 years.
That's
like, awesome. I think I've seen every episode at least once. And that is That is true.
You've seen them more than I have then, because I don't think I've seen every single episode.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I don't watch myself do anything. So,
can I ask you to do one fan thing for me?
Like, yes, of course.
Can you do your Steve Blues Clues and just ask, "Hey, Mythfits, how you doing?"
Hey, Mythfits, it's you. Oh, it's awesome.
It's great to see you. How are you? How you doing? Like that?
Dude, perfect. I just got chills. Nailed it.
Woo!
That was awesome. That was awesome. Oh my God.
Thank you so much. You've been so awesome.
I'm absolutely a misfit. Or at least I hope I am.
You are a misfit. You are a misfit.
Oh my God. You are.
Yeah, I mean, so if misfits are your fans, I am a misfit.
We're all Mythfits. This is a community. It's not me and Tori. It's all of us. It's all of the people who were a part of the Mythbuster process community. We've always been really, really engaged with our fans. We answer questions from them constantly. And we've always been on message boards having actual long conversations with them. So, like, you're a Mythfit.
I got to get on those message boards because I am certainly a proud Mythfit.
Well, yeah, you can always just talk. You can hit us up, too.
Okay. Dude, this has been so much fun. Thank you. Like, seriously, it's like, I feel like my daughter would freak out if she came in here and saw you. It's just, this is awesome.
Well, tell her I said hi and tell her Josh said hi. All right. Thanks, guys.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Stash. What if you could start investing without ever picking a single stock? With Stash, the experts handle the hard part for you.
Stash isn't just another investing app. It's a registered investment advisor that combines automatic investing with expert guidance, so you don't have to worry about figuring it out on your own.
You can choose from personalized investments or let Stash's award-winning smart portfolio do the work for you.
With Stash, investing doesn't feel like gambling. It's simple, smart, and stress-free. So your money can finally start working as hard as you do.
Get access to world-class financial advice with personalized guidance for just $3 per monthly subscription. Stash has already helped millions of Americans reach their financial goals. Don't let your money sit around. Put it to work with Stash.
Go to get.stash.com/mythfits and see how you can receive $25 towards your first stock purchase and to view important disclosures. That's get.stash.com/mythfits. Paid non-client endorsement.
Not representative of all clients and not a guarantee. Investment advisory services offered by Stash Investments LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investing involves risk. Offer is subject to T&Cs. That was such a special podcast, just to be able to hear his journey and get his perspective on his career and then how our show impacted him. I'm glad you stalked him, Gary. I appreciate it. Usually I don't, but this time I appreciate it.
Do you get something, like there's something special about Steve where it's, he engages you with his voice and the way he looks into the camera in a way that he instantly, I do feel like he's my friend. It just felt like we've known him forever. And I don't know, he's got something special. There's an it factor there where it's just like, wow, I adore you.
Yeah. And you said it best when he first started talking. You're like, normally we're like this and blah, blah. And both of us kind of were like, yeah, let's take a step back. Let's quiet our voices. I mean, he has a very calming personality and it's wonderful.
I'm sorry, but if the Calm app or one of those like meditation apps hasn't called him to do something, I feel like that right there, that could be his moneymaker. Because if he just talked
at
before
night,
I had
go to bed.
Sleep, I'd be like,
go to sleep by Steve Burns. Yeah, well, I was like, right? Can I get your number? So like, if I'm ever stressed out, I just give you a call and you just talk me down.
Maybe just read Harry Potter to me. I don't know. Just read a book in your Steve way.
Oh my God. My nieces are going to freak out because they grew up on that Blue's Clues. The first, you know, the first few seasons. And I told my mom and my mom told my sister, she called, oh my God, You're going to talk to Steve Burns? No way. Like, she was geeking out so hard. And I'm like, whoa, he's had such a huge impact on so many people.
Just such a cool guy.
Yeah. All right. Is it time to read a fan question?
It is. It is that time. All right, Tori, we got a question here from Curtis the Supreme with two E's. Curtis the Supreme. Okay, here's the question. What would young Carrie and young Tori think of your role on Mythbusters, your life now, and what y'all have been up to? What would a young Tori think of you? Like, what do you think?
I don't think young Tori would definitely be like, no way, I can't do that. There's no way I can do all that stuff. I'll let him do that. I can't. Like, as a kid, looking at people who were on TV, it was just like, how do they do that? I remember asking a friend, I'm like, how are these people able to like get out there and put themselves on national television? I can't, it would be too much exposure. I'd be too nervous. And they're like, they get paid a lot of money. And then it's just funny how that became our careers.
I mean, I as well would not have believed it because I was so painfully shy.
Yeah.
And also just not a performer. I am not somebody who likes getting on stage. And I tried out for the High School Musical. It was Bye Bye Birdie. And I only did it because all of my friends were going to do it. And my best friend Brittany's like an amazing dancer, and Holly. And like they were singers, they were dancers, and they did these great tryouts. And I like under prepped because I just didn't know what I was doing. And I got up there and choked and started to cry.
Oh no.
And it was like me and one other kid were the only ones that didn't make it. Like, it was like an automatic, you make the chorus or something. And they're like, nah.
Oh, it's like getting picked last to play sports. Oh, you're like,
but now being in front of the camera, what? That's crazy. And all the stuff that we've done over the years that have been, I mean, they've been brave, but they've been brave because they've been terrifying, and we would do it anyway. You know, like, you've jumped off of buildings and you freaking hate heights. Like, yeah. we've faced so many fears and have, you know, learned along the way. Like, the fact that, you know, I walked into Jamie's shop and lied about ever being able to use a table saw and just figured it out. Like, as a kid, I would never believe that I could be the woman that could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. What advice would you give now as an adult? What advice would you give to the young Carrie?
It gets better.
Yeah.
And you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
I was so insecure as a kid, and I just really wish that somebody be like, it's going to be all right. It gets better.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of kids, especially like who grew up during the pandemic, where it was just everything was just out of control, and it was like fear inducing. I wish you could just go and tell every kid, just wait, it gets better. It's going to be okay. Like, there was times when I was a kid that I was like, childhood, this sucks. Like, I don't want to grow up. And now looking back, it's like, God, everything turned out fine. Like, all those fears that you had, that you're the worst thing could possibly happen, usually doesn't happen. And it's just like a message that you want to get to these kids. It's like, just hang in there. It's going to be okay.
I love that.
Yeah. All right. Well, Carrie, great to see you. I'm glad you got a hold of Steve. That was an amazing interview. So good to talk to him.
What a cool guy. And I hope everybody goes and listens to his podcast and goes and finds him, because myth confirmed, he is alive.
He is alive.
Steve from
well.
Blue's Clues is alive.
And he's now a Mythfits.
He's a Mythfit. Oh my God, I love that so much. I'm going to put that up on social media somewhere. It was like, Mythfits, what are you doing? Like, cool.
Let's do it right now. All right, Mythfit. Thanks for
How are you? All right, that's our episode today. Thank you guys for joining us.
Yeah, stay weird.
Stay weird, Mythfits.
Pioneer.